Hi, it's Patrick Cox here, reporter with PRI's The World. And this is the third of four special podcasts we're doing to coincide with the 70th anniversary of the first ever nuclear attack, the U.S. bombing of Hiroshima. The series, which is called Hiroshima Generations, is supported by the United States Japan Foundation. There's a lot more beside the podcast. You can find it all at pri.org/Hiroshima. So we've been talking with survivors of the blast and also with family members, younger ones, sons, daughters, grandchildren, people who are figuring out what to do with the burden of memory. For these younger family members, what's their responsibility to their loved one? What's their responsibility to future generations? And how do they even make sense of what happened, given that they weren't there? It's just stories they've been told. I spent a day with a woman who's asked herself all these questions and many more. And there's a sting in the tail for her family, too. Nuclear lightning struck the family not once, but twice. Here's the story. On a recent steamy morning, I take a ride on a ferry from Hiroshima to a small island 20 minutes away, Ninoshima. I disembark with my traveling companion, Aya Kanu. She's a reporter with Hiroshima's main newspaper.
I came here 10 years ago when I was 24 years old.
It was a trip that changed Kanu, and it was the first in a series of big moments in her life, moments that have caused her to reevaluate her sense of family and country. We drive for a couple of miles over a hill to the other side of the island. The man who takes us here, Noboru Hirata, he's lived on Ninoshima all his life, and he's taken us to a shrine and a small park where once there was a mass grave. They wanted to cremate people from Hiroshima here, Hirata says, but there were too many of them. In the chaotic days after August 6, 1945, this island became an evacuation zone. Boatload after boatload of people were brought here. Some were already dead. Others, suffering from acute radiation sickness, died within days. Over the years, many bodies have been exhumed. I don't think there are any more bodies left at this spot, Hirata says. But elsewhere on the island, I've heard there are still some left. When Aya Kanu, the reporter, first came to the island 10 years ago, it was on assignment. Her paper wanted a story on the latest exhumation. What she saw took her breath away.
A lot of bones. I could see a lot of bones.
This may not sound altogether shocking or surprising, but in a country that cremates more than 99.8% of its citizens, the sight of human bones suggests a complete breakdown in the natural order of things. Kanu imagined she could hear the souls of these bodies crying out to her.
I thought that they were saying, like, I don't like to be here. Why I have to be here?
In that instant, she says, she realized that the atomic bomb wasn't just history. She hadn't cared about it at school. She hadn't even cared at home, where she knew that her own grandparents were survivors of the bomb. But she cared now.
After that, I asked my grandmother to tell her story about her testimony. Then I have changed my mind at that time.
It was, she says, the moment she grew up. But there were other big moments to come. A couple of years after her trip to Ninoshima, Kanu's newspaper gave her the job of covering the Shimane nuclear power plant not far from Hiroshima.
At that time, I believed the safe myth of nuclear power plant. I have no question about that.
The owners of this plant had long wanted to expand capacity, but scientists warned of a recently discovered fault line that could make the plant prone to earthquake damage. The company insisted it could withstand a major quake. It would be safe.
And I believe that. I wrote about that. It is safe.
When the fears of scientists were realized, it wasn't at the nuclear plant Kanu was writing about, but years later and hundreds of miles away in Fukushima. An earthquake, a tidal wave, nuclear meltdown, radiation leaks,
local residents evacuated. Kanu says she started to question her own thinking again. By then, she was no longer reporting on nuclear energy, so she felt she couldn't even set matters straight. And then there was her uncle.
Akira. My uncle's name is Akira.
He worked for a subcontractor of TEPCO, the company running the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant, and he lived close to the plant.
My uncle evacuated from his hometown to the safe place. At that time, we were very worried about him.
Have you ever talked to him about nuclear issues?
He doesn't want to talk much about the accident, but he said, I thank TEPCO. He said only that.
Thanking TEPCO may have made sense to her uncle, a veteran worker in nuclear plants, but it unsettled Kanu. It made her think that she'd failed in her duty to properly inform the public about the perils of nuclear power. And it still plagues her. The Japanese government is currently deciding when to restart many of the country's nuclear power plants. They've all been offline since the Fukushima accident. And there's the question of memory. Although the memory of Hiroshima has become important to her, Kanu is afraid the memory of Fukushima is fading.
I'm forgetting about Fukushima. Even though my uncle evacuated from safe place, even though my relative is the victim of the accident, but I'm forgetting.
Kanu is tough on herself. As she sees it, she's confronting her own flaws. She's doing that by coming here to Ninoshima, and she's also trying to talk with her relatives about their crossed paths with two nuclear catastrophes. Talking with her grandmother about Hiroshima has become difficult, just like the strained conversations with her uncle about Fukushima. If even the smallest unit in society, the family, cannot find a way to discuss these things, she asks, then how can we move forward? And then this candid, self-critical woman lightens up. Something good did come out of the tragedy of the A-bomb, she says. It goes like this. Kanu's grandfather was widowed after the blast, but then he met her grandmother.
Because of the bomb, my grandpa and my grandma get married. Then my father was born. So if atomic bomb was not dropped, I am not here.
You can't exactly celebrate a legacy like that, but maybe you can do what Aya Kanu has done, which is come to terms with it over time and then try to pass it on to others. For The World, I'm Patrick Cox.
We have more from Aya Kanu and the shrine at Ninoshima online. I took a bunch of pictures. There's video too. It's all at pri.org/Hiroshima. That's it for this podcast. Thanks for listening. And I'll be back with the final podcast from Hiroshima very soon.